If you haven't been with us for the past couple of weeks, whether you're here in person or listening online, right now we're really working through this idea of dreams. And what does it mean to dream with God? What does it mean to really confront this question of what if? What if the problems that I see around me are not just problems, but what if they've been brought to me for a very specific reason? What if I've been drawn to them for a very specific reason? What if I'm actually created to be part of the solution? What if? And over the past couple of weeks, we've been working through this beautiful story of a man named Nehemiah and how he asked this question, what if? And what it looks like to begin to engage the world and look at problems as opportunities. What it looks like to engage the world and begin to, rather than being overwhelmed by it, rather than being overcome by it, to dream with God. And one of the things that was really exciting for me this past week is that last week I asked you to take advantage of your online program and to submit your dreams. And several of you did. As a matter of fact, all week I was getting more and more emails as those of you who are watching on live stream were beginning to submit your dreams. And almost on a daily basis, I was getting more and more and more of these dreams, and they just kept coming. And it was really, really exciting, because if there's anything that I want for you, if there's anything that I'm praying for inside of our church family as we walk through this conversation, it's that you will begin to dream again. I think for so many of us, our ability to dream has died. And whether it's because of just discouragement that we've experienced along the way, or those who've told us that we couldn't, or whether it's because of failure, I think for so many of us, we've lost our ability to dream. We've lost our ability to be able to see what is not yet, to be able to look into brokenness and to be able to see how beauty could emerge from it. We've lost it. And my prayer for us as we move through this, more than anything else, is that we would begin to learn to dream again. Throughout my life, I've had the opportunity to live in a lot of different places and to meet a lot of different people. And one of the real benefits to that is that I've been able to see people dream. Some really cool and unique dreams. I remember when I was living in Alabama, I had a friend who was a part of the Alabama football team. So he was a very big person, okay? Like, think of like the biggest person that you know, and then imagine them being a foot taller and a foot wider, okay? I mean, he was a huge person, and he had all these friends who were huge people where they couldn't really ride in cars together. They all had to take their own individual cars because you can't fit multiples of them in the same vehicle, right? I mean, these are big, big guys. And I remember they had this passion. They wanted to impact their school. And they wanted to impact the students that they went to school with. But rather than just doing what people had done before, they began to dream. And I remember kind of listening to these dreams as they were beginning to develop, and they were looking at one another, and they were looking at what was going on in the school. And at that point in time in the university, there was all sorts of problems with fraternities and sororities and the parties, and there was just a ton of underage drinking, so much so that several of the fraternities and sororities were being threatened to be shut down. And so they began to look at this, and then they looked at one another, and they began to dream of, okay, how could God use us in this situation? And they launched this bouncer ministry, right? Which is just like a crazy thing to do. But they're like, you know what we could do? We could go to these fraternities and sororities, and we could offer to be the people at the front door, to be the bouncers for their parties. Because the problem is that they were having is that they were assigning someone within the fraternity or the sorority to check IDs, which means that they're going to check IDs as long as the person isn't attractive to them, right? And if the person is attractive, then they can just go right in. And so there was all this trouble. So they decided, hey, listen, we're huge and we can just go. No one's going to mess with us. And so they went to these fraternities and sororities and said, listen, if you'll let us, we'll just come and we'll be the bouncers for your parties. You wouldn't believe the number of conversations that came out of that. First of all, the fraternities and sororities were like, wait a second, I mean, you're just going to do this for us? They're like, yeah. We just want to love you and serve you. And then the conversations that they were having at the door. And I always tell people, if you want to learn how to be able to share Christ, hang out with drunk people. It's like the best. I remember when I first came to Hoboken, I would go to any party I was invited to. I didn't care where it was. I was just building relationships and meeting people. And I had, even for those of you who will be in backstage pass today, I always say, you know, I really learned how to be able to share the gospel as I was at parties. And drunk people would come ask me what I do. And I'd say, well, I'm here to plant a church. And they'd be like, what does that mean? And I'd say, well, let me tell you. And we have this opportunity to sit down, and it's great because they'll ask you any question. So you better be prepared, right? They'll ask you any question and you have no idea what's going to come next. And it really did. It helped me to be able to learn how to be able to really share Christ with those around me. And they had all these opportunities as they're sitting at the doors to these parties to encounter people in some of their darkest moments and some really difficult situations. All because of a group of people who decided to dream. My hope and prayer for you is that you would once again begin to dream. That God would begin to ignite in you the reality that with Him anything is possible. And for some of you, that's happening. It's really cool to see how these dreams are beginning to bubble up inside of our community. Even as we come to the end of the service today, there are a couple in this room where people are just dreaming of what's possible and what's next. And as we've been looking at, okay, how do we begin to dream? Not only have we been talking about dreaming, but then looking at, okay, how do you move from it being a dream to actually it becoming reality? And last week, we looked at just the beautiful things that Nehemiah and the story of Nehemiah teaches us about leadership and when to be able to share our dream and how to begin planning and the importance of planning as you're beginning to move from this just being this thing that you hope magically appears to where you're beginning to actually put things in place for this to become a reality. And then how do you engage authority? And I love what we're learning from him just as far as leadership is concerned. And how to be able to bring change. And some of you are beginning to plan. And as we walked through the week, I was able to have conversations with different people about where they were in this process. And some of them were a little bit further along in the planning. As a matter of fact, as you walk around following the service today, one of the ones who's in here is an individual who's dreaming of a community garden. But not just a community garden where people can raise their own items, but then also a community garden where people are working to raise fresh fruits and vegetables to be able to bring to the homeless shelters so that they can have fresh fruits and vegetables to be able to eat on a routine basis. And as we were having conversations with her, we realized that she'd already begun this planning process. And so we wanted to give you a chance to be able to hear about it and maybe to be able to join her in that. It's really, really cool. And some of you are beginning to not just have this dream, but you're beginning to plan. And today what I want to do is I want to talk to you about something that happens in the life of Nehemiah when he begins to plan. And something that if we don't pay attention to, I think can really lead us in the wrong direction. Because I think as you begin to move from it being a dream to it being a plan, there's a dangerous shift that can happen. If we're not paying attention, there's a dangerous shift that can so easily begin to sneak in this process. And if we allow it to sneak in, if we allow it to happen, unfortunately, we'll find ourselves very easily and very quickly coming to the point where we are either limited in our dream or we come to the point where we're paralyzed in our dream. Because as you begin to plan, if you're really dreaming big, as you begin to plan, one of the things that you're going to be confronted with, and I remember as we look back at the beginning of Hoboken Grace and launching this thing and the dream that we could raise up a church that would impact the city in really powerful ways, I remember having this big dream of what this was going to look like and what I believe God wanted to do in our city. And man, my brother-in-law, Steve, and I, we used to get together and we would hang out at this coffee shop down on Washington Street. And we'd talk about this dream of what we wanted to see happen and what we believed God was doing inside of our city. And then we would begin to plan. But what usually happened was this. We were really excited about the dream. And then we would look at the plan and we would say to one another pretty consistently, wow, this kind of sucks. And we're constantly being confronted with just how poor the plan was in light of how big the dream was. And it just seemed like no matter how much time we spent on it, we couldn't figure everything out. And I struggle with this thing, and maybe you struggle with it as well, called perfectionism, right? Where you want it to be perfect. How many of you struggle with that? Right? It's nice and dark in here, so you can raise your hands. At the Hamilton location, I was like, how many of you struggle? But in Hamilton, you can see each other. So I was like, oh, no one else raised their hand. But in here, you're like, oh, no one can see me. Whatever. Yeah, we struggle with this, right? Like, we want it to be perfect. And what can happen in this process is that you have this huge dream. You have this huge dream, and you begin to put the plan in place. But as you're looking at the plan, you're like, man, I don't know how to figure it out. And no matter how much time you spend on it, no matter how hard you work at it, it still seems insufficient. It still seems like there's holes. There's still other things that you need to figure out. There's so many variables. There's so many what ifs as far as your plan is concerned. And what can happen as we walk through this is that very easily we can become overwhelmed by this plan and we can find ourselves paralyzed. One of our core values here is a core value called reflection. We believe that everything we do communicates something about who God is. And so for those who claim to represent Jesus Christ, we believe everything, every action, we're communicating something about who He is. And so it's very important to us what we do, how we handle ourselves. But sometimes this idea of reflection and the importance of reflection, it can, rather than being something that helps us to live the dream, it can actually be something that paralyzes us in living the dream. And I think it's because somewhere along the way, there's a shift in where our confidence lies. And one of the things that I love about this story of Nehemiah is that as he's walking us through his story, he demonstrates for us where our confidence must remain if we're going to actually see the dream become reality. Now, let me be clear about this. I'm talking about dreams. I'm talking about things that are beyond you. The truth is, if you're just trying to do what you know you can do, then you probably never will become overwhelmed by the plan because you have it laid out. You've got it figured out. You can do it, your own strength, your own power. I'm talking about those situations where you step in and God says, you know what, I want you to be part of changing that. And you're tackling things that are so big, you have no idea where you would even start. Nehemiah is walking into something that is so beyond him. And as he does, he demonstrates something that's so important to us. And in the passage that we're going to be walking through, there's three things that I want you to pay attention to, but there's one in particular that I want to focus on. I want to take you back to Nehemiah chapter 2, just give you a little bit of context of the story, where we are in the story. For those of you who haven't been with us, Nehemiah is a cupbearer. He serves a foreign king, and he's actually in exile. He's been exiled from his country, the nation of Israel, and Israel's been basically destroyed. The city of Jerusalem is lying in ruins. And as Nehemiah finds out about what's happening back in Jerusalem, he begins to dream that God could use him to make an impact. And so he goes to the king. The king miraculously gives him permission to be able to go back and rebuild the walls. As he arrives, he begins to put this plan together. And by night, he's moving through the city to be able to examine what's happening and how to be able to move forward with this plan. And that's where we're going to pick up today. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 16, just jumping back a little bit, it says, the city officials did not know I had been out there or what I was doing, for I had not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. And so he's talking about, you know, I didn't arrive and share it right away, but I'm moving through the city. I'm trying to figure out what this looks like, putting the plan together, until finally he shares with them. He says, but now I said with them, you know very well the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. And so they replied at once, yes, let's rebuild the wall. So they began the good work. And that's where we left off last week. And at that point, it looks really good. It looks like everything's moving forward. There really hasn't been any problems along the way at all. And where we left off last week, it's like, man, this is incredible. This is just going to happen. But listen to what happens next. It says, they replied at once, yes, let's rebuild the wall. So they began the good work. But when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, heard of our plan, they scoffed contemptuously. What are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king, they asked. And so it looks like everything's going great. It looks like everything, there's no obstacles. There's really nothing that's been in the way. The king said yes. The leader said yes. Everything's falling in place. And then they begin to roll out this plan. They begin to communicate this plan, not just to the rulers, but to everyone. And all of a sudden, these three individuals learn about it, and they step in, and they look at the plan. And here's the thing. If you're going to dream, and you begin to put together a plan, you need to expect this. They step in, and they look at the plan, and here's what they say. Who in the world are you? I love the word that's used here, that they scoffed at him. In other words, they look at the plan like, is this some kind of joke? Really? You think you're going to rebuild the walls? You think you're going to show up and having only been here for a little amount of time, you're going to be the one who restores Jerusalem? Does the king even know about this? And really quickly, it's not the main point of what is happening here, but I want to make sure you understand this, because if you're going to dream of impact, I'm telling you, you're going to encounter this. There will be those who look at the plan and they will say to you, it's never going to happen. Who are you? And the truth is, that could have crushed Nehemiah, because Nehemiah had no business doing this. He's a cupbearer. You don't choose a cupbearer to rebuild your walls. He's literally just been lifting gold cups his whole life. It's ridiculous. They look at him and say, who in the world are you? One of the realities, if you're going to begin to move into areas of restoration, is that there are those who benefit from the brokenness. See, these three individuals, they benefited from the brokenness. They benefited from the insecurity of the people who lived in Jerusalem. They benefited from the fact that these people believed that God had given up on them. And the last thing that they wanted to see happen was that their hope would be restored. There will always be those who benefit from the brokenness. And when you begin to step in and you begin to come in with a plan of how restoration could happen or how restoration would happen, you can count on it. There will be those who will come against you. And I think sometimes we walk into those situations and we're like, well, it's a good thing. This is the way it's supposed to be. And so how could anyone come against me? The reality is there are those who benefit from the brokenness. And in this moment, these three, they stand up and they say to Nehemiah, who are you? What in the world do you think you're doing? And I think this passage teaches us to expect it. But then more importantly, and this is where I want to draw your attention today. More importantly, look at how he responds, because how Nehemiah responds to me is intriguing. Because there's all sorts of ways that he could respond, especially because as they're questioning him, they're saying, what, are you rebelling against the king? Does the king even know about this? You have this ridiculous plan of how you're going to rebuild this. What, are you rebelling against the king? I think for a lot of us in that situation, our response would be, hey, listen, I got all these letters from the king. Remember, he literally had letters from the king that endorsed his plan. And the king had not just written that he could rebuild the city, but the king had actually written to be able to provide resources for the city to be rebuilt. And I think for a lot of us, that would be our response. Like, listen, I'm not trying to rebel against the king. The king is actually behind me in this. But Nehemiah doesn't. I think it would have been really easy to respond and say, listen, Look at my plan. I haven't just thrown this together. He's already demonstrated for the first two chapters just how wise he is. He has an incredible plan. And when you begin to see it work out in chapter 3, you see, no, he's really planned this well. I think it could have been really easy for him to step in and say, no, look at my plan. I may be a cupbearer, but man, I got this thing figured out. I know exactly how it's going to work. But he doesn't. He doesn't point to the king. He doesn't point to the plan. Listen to what he says. He said, "What are you doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" they asked. I replied, "The God of heaven will help us succeed. We, his servants, will start rebuilding this wall. But you have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem." He could have pointed to the king. He could have pointed to the plan. But he didn't. Because here's the thing. His confidence wasn't found in the fact that the king was behind him. His confidence wasn't found in the plan that he had put together. His confidence was found in who God was and what he believed God wanted to do. And there can be this shift that takes place when we begin to move from dreaming with God. And you're dreaming about what's possible. Man, this is incredible. I can't wait. I can't wait to see this happen. But then you start to put together a plan. As you start to put together the plan, there can be this shift where all of a sudden you begin to find confidence in your planning ability or in the plan that you've laid out, rather than understanding that even the best of your plans could not possibly accomplish what God wants to accomplish. Nehemiah looked at the plan. But rather than finding confidence in it, he kept his confidence in God, which allowed him, when the plan was questioned, to continue to move forward. You see, when your confidence begins to be about your plan and how you're going to make this a reality or how you're going to make this happen, when people begin to step in and question it, you can very quickly become paralyzed. Or you can become limited because you begin to scale back to what you know you understand or what you know you've figured out or the answers that you know you've found. And all of a sudden, this big dream becomes very small. Because it's dependent on you. And all of a sudden, the joy is lost because the pressure is on you. And if it's going to become a reality, it has to do with you, not him. But not for Nehemiah. Nehemiah said, No. My confidence is in who my God is. And you guys can mock my plan, whatever. It's not about my plan. It's about who he is. And what I believe he wants to do in this city. And so they begin. Listen to that next line. He says, "But you have no share, legal right, or historic claim in Jerusalem. We will start rebuilding this wall." As you move through this process, planning is important, but don't get caught up in believing that your plan is what's going to help you or what is going to make you successful. Because in the end, it's all about him and what he can do. And so they begin to rebuild. I'm not going to read to you much of chapter 3, mainly because it's ridiculously hard to read. If you have a chance to look at Nehemiah chapter 3, you'll see that there's about 7,000 names in it. And none of them make any sense with those letters put together. But as you read through it, it's really intriguing because you see all these people get involved in this. And I think you see, as you look at the story of Nehemiah and continuing in this process of dreams becoming a reality, I think you see, listen, you need to expect. You need to expect that there are going to be those who come against you. I think you see that, listen, as you're working through this, you have to make sure that your confidence remains in Him and not in your plan. But then also, as you get to chapter 3, you see something beautiful about this process that again, God is teaching us through the story of Nehemiah. Because as you get to chapter 3, it says, then Eliashib, the high priest, and the other priests started to rebuild the sheep gate. Jump down a little bit later. The fish gate was built by the sons of Hassanah. They laid the beams, set up its doors, and installed its bolts and bars. And through this whole thing, it's laying out different people and different families who are working on all different parts of the wall. It says the old city gate was repaired by Joiada, son of whatever, whoever. And it's not even just their names. It's like the name of their uncle and their aunt and their mother. You get the point, right? And so just going through in all these different places, showing how God is using all these different people to be a part of this dream. And I think as you see this, you see another really beautiful thing about dreaming with God. And that is this. God doesn't just give you the dream for you. He gives you the dream so that you can bring other people into this and so that you can empower other people to be used in significant ways inside of what God's doing. So that you can bring hope into people's lives that they too can be used by God in really powerful ways. And as you read through it, one of the things that I love is that you hear not just the people's names, but oftentimes it tells you what they do. And so you see that the priests are rebuilding part of the wall. How good do you think they are at building? And as you read through the different families and the different groups of people, you see all these people who are completely unqualified. Being used by God in a remarkably powerful way. And one of the amazing things about this story of Nehemiah, and I think you see it demonstrated in this passage, is that Nehemiah understands that he's not qualified to be used by God in the way that God's about to use him. And one of the great things about being a normal person who is used by God in really powerful ways is that you know what it says to the people who are sitting around you? He can use you too. One of the great things about Paul's story is not only that Paul learned that God could use him too, but that Paul's beginning to dream of empowering people to understand that he wants to use them too. And so Nehemiah didn't come into Jerusalem and say, okay, listen, let's gather together all the builders and all the carpenters and all the people who are really skilled at doing this, and we're going to use you. The rest of you just continue to go about your daily lives and you just do what you do. No, Nehemiah didn't believe that the power behind what they were going to do had anything to do with their qualifications. He didn't believe that it had anything to do with whether or not they should be used. His confidence was entirely in this unbelievable God who constantly uses normal, everyday people to do crazy things. And as you read through the scriptures, you find it over and over and over again where God is using people who are completely unqualified. You look at Acts and how on the day of Pentecost, when the church begins, when the church launches, right? Peter and these disciples, they go out and they begin to share this message of who Jesus Christ is. And the thing that amazes the people who are hearing them is that they look at these people and they say, wait a second, these people aren't qualified to be able to do what they're doing, and yet God's using them in unbelievable ways. Nehemiah's story in so many different ways and in so many different facets. It's just communicating to us over and over and over and over and over again. It doesn't matter where you are. It doesn't matter what your qualifications are. It doesn't matter whether the walls have been broken. It doesn't matter if when you look at your life, it lies in ruins. There is hope. Because the God of heaven and earth, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God who sent Jesus Christ to give his life for you, is a God who restores. And he invites you to not only experience that, but begin to dream of how you can bring that to the world around you. I don't know where you are in this process. In just a little bit, we're going to give you a chance to really experience the beauty of people who have been dreaming. And in just a little bit, I'm going to release you, and throughout the room, you're going to see all sorts of different ways that people are dreaming of impacting people, some inside of our church family, some outside of our church family, all these creative ways that people are looking at, okay, how can we dream of impacting people, some in ways that you'd expect, some in ways that you wouldn't. You see, we believe what Nehemiah believed, that it's not about our qualifications. It's not about our plan. We believe God wants to change this city. We believe he loves this city more than we do, more than we ever could. And so over and over again, as normal people, we want to engage this journey with him. And just say, what if? What if? What if God could use me to change that? Don't limit God in what he wants to do in you personally. Don't limit God in what he wants to do through you in the world. And you're going to get a chance to be able to see all sorts of ways that you can get involved in that. Now, I want to challenge you with this, because all of us are at different places with this. Some of you are here for the very first time. Really good-looking girl invited you, so you decided to come. And you're like, man, they want me to get involved in serving in some way, shape, or form. And no, you don't need to get involved. But here's what I want to challenge you with. As we dismiss in just a second, I want to invite you to just make your way around the room. And if you would, just talk to two people about how God is using them. Just stop by at two tables and just introduce yourself. And we're not going to ask you to make a commitment. They're not going to pressure you in any way, shape, or form. But just ask them about how God is using them. Well, what does this team do? And how does this impact people finding their way back to God? And just begin to explore the beauty of how God is using people, ordinary people. And here's the thing that you need to understand. When you go to these tables, the leaders at these tables, they're not special people. They're people just like you. They have jobs just like you do. They work right beside you. They're not special people. They're just people who've decided to begin to dream with God of how they could be used. And so I want to challenge you, even if today's your first time with us, just go around, listen to two people's stories. For those of you who are here and you're already serving and you're inside of a team that's dreaming, I want to challenge you just to explore, to be able to see all the different things that God's doing. And then I also want to challenge you to meet two people that you don't know. This is about us doing this together. This is about family. This is about a community. So I just want to challenge you. Just meet two people that you don't know. And they don't have to be leaders at tables, just two people who are walking around, and just kind of ask them, you know, like, how is God using you? Or share how God is using yourself. But just two people to just continue for us coming together as a community and as a family. And then for those of you who are here and you're not yet serving, but you've been on this journey and you're beginning to dream of God using you in a really powerful way, I want to encourage you, don't try to find the perfect place, but find a place and start. Just get started. And coming alongside of a group of people and dreaming of how God could use you to help people find their way back to Him. What if? What if we were meant for more? I'm going to pray for us, and then I'll release you to enjoy the room. Father, as we continue to dream of how you could use us, I thank you for this reminder that our confidence in this is found in you and how you use ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Father, I pray that you would continue to show us how you would use us. Continue to fuel in us a passion for bringing you to the world around us. In Jesus' name, amen.